हरिः ॐ भूर्भुवस्व तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो नः प्रचोदयात्। May we meditate on that Supreme Being who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in achieving. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We have been studying Shankara's Crystal of Illumination. Now I shall tell you the nature of the Atman. If you realize it, you'll be freed from the bonds of ignorance and attain liberation. Now this Atman, that is the true self, is considered as one with Brahman or God. This is rather difficult to grasp even intellectually. Because when we say Atman or self, it is not the ego, not anything that you and I know about. Just as we are in ignorance about God, what God is, we do not know. Until you realize, until you attain. Similarly, it is the same thing. Just as we do not know what God is, so we do not know what Atman, the true self, is. And when we know what God is, we know what self is. And when we know what self is, or Atman is, we know God. Now then again is brought out this wonderful truth. Generally, you see, when you think of God, yes, God is something outside. That is the general idea. But if you understand that kingdom of God is within, God dwelling within. See, there is the one Sanskrit word for God, Narayana, which means who dwells in the hearts of all. And here again try to understand this, that God does not dwell in this sense that a part of His being is in you and a part of His being is in me, that He has divided Himself. You see, our difficulty and everybody's difficulty with regard to grasping this truth is because of our limitations of our mind, because our mind can only grasp and think in terms of time, space and relativity. And so when we think of God as within, and even the point, they point out the location. So we begin to wonder, how can that vastness God, that infinite God, can dwell within this frame of a body? But we are thinking of the infinitude, of the absolute, of the of that great truth as vastness, space, occupying space. And that how can that vastness that occupies this vast space, who pervades this whole universe, this infinite universe, how can it exist within this body? Because we are thinking in terms of space. But where is space? Space is in the mind, is in God. And so it is true, it is possible, that infinite God, dwells in an infinite way, in its infinite grandeur, in every creature, in every heart. This passage, beautiful passage. Here within this body, in the pure mind, in the secret chamber of intelligence, in the infinite universe within the heart, the Atman shines in its captivating splendor like a noonday sun. By its light, the universe is revealed. Try to grasp this. How that Atman, or God, dwelling within the chamber of your heart. And what kind of a chamber of heart? Where the whole infinite universe is existing. Sounds rather crazy idea. But remember, you know, in a drop of water, there is the whole solar system. That's crazy. It seems crazy to us because, as I said, we are trying to grasp with this mind, and this mind can never get rid of this idea of time and space and causation. That's the whole difficulty. Otherwise, science is proving it. Spiritual experiences prove it. And yet, it is so difficult to grasp. And that's why there may be misunderstanding. So remember this. That what you understand as that kingdom of God within, or God dwelling within, that is the Atman, refers the Atman, the Self, refers to that God. And that God again is dwelling in his completeness, in his splendor, in his greatest splendor, in you, in me, in every being. Now again, he says, don't confuse this with your ego. You will have that experience, that realization of that great splendor of God. And the ego is forgotten. The Atman. That is the Atman. That is the Self. So again, you find in the Upanishads how they try to describe the Self. Neti, 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 Atman. Not this, not that. What you think, what you conceive as yourself, it is not that. Now he says, now I shall tell you the nature of the Atman. If you realize it, you'll be freed from the bonds of ignorance and attain liberation. That main thing, realize. And realization is the word we use to denote that superconscious, that transcendental vision. You see, you may go to bed and you can sleep, and then you may dream. You may dream holy dreams. That is not experience. That would not be the vision of God. It's a vision of God would come to you when you completely are lost with regard to this universe, the body, mind, senses, everything. There is the revelation of Brahman, of God, the Atman. It's a transcendental something, not within the three states of consciousness, waking, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. It's beyond those, beyond them. That's the vision. And once you attain that vision, whole life is transformed. Values of life change. Your body, senses, mind, everything becomes purified. And with such purified heart and mind and body, anything that you do is something that is holy and pure. You see, Holy Mother used to say, does God vision mean that you'll have two horns or something different you will look? No. But your inner life will be transformed. Now again, what is that inner life? How is it transformed? See, what is God? You know, you will find this description of the nature of the Atman. Shankara here emphasizes upon pure consciousness. He is the consciousness. He is the knowledge, the witness of all the states of consciousness. He is the eternal consciousness. What does it mean? You see, when that knowledge comes, when you realize that pure consciousness, is it merely knowledge of objects and things? No. It is that light of knowledge that is the same as love, same as joy or ananda. You see, Shankara also is misunderstood. And, you know, the stray, those who have not gone deep into this spiritual life, they will say, Shankara is knowledge, he is teaching knowledge, and another is teaching devotion. But you see, when you teach knowledge, there is devotion there, there is love there. And when you teach devotion or love, there is knowledge there. How can there be love without knowledge? How can there be knowledge without love? Only in their expression they differ. See, how is Brahman described? Sat-chit ananda. Sat means life, infinite life, eternal existence. Chit means consciousness, pure consciousness, or infinite wisdom, or knowledge. And ananda means love, infinite love. And what is the meaning of love again? Love means joy, happiness. Love and joy, these are identical terms. And now, when one is talking about devotion, he is emphasizing upon ananda. But he cannot separate. What is sat is chit and ananda. And another is emphasizing upon chit. That's the difference. Bhakti, devotion, and jnana, knowledge, are not two different things. Only emphasis is different. But one who has devotion has knowledge, one who has knowledge has devotion. If the person claims he has knowledge, but no devotion, no joy along with that, then that's not knowledge. That kind of knowledge, you see, you squeeze the encyclopedia. Nothing is there. That is not knowledge. Wherever there is knowledge, there is devotion. There is love. There is ananda, joy, happiness. So if you have any revelation, if you have the knowledge, pure consciousness, if you realize it, that knowledge, your life will be filled with devotion, love, and happiness. Bliss. Now again, sat, that's the common something. In every one of us, there is that awareness of sat, of that existence. But to be fully aware is the thing. That is, you have to be conscious about it. God is. You cannot deny yourself. So there is that awareness in a way of yourself. But only it is capital S, not your ego. That is God. So, there's a beautiful passage in the Upanishad. In our spiritual life, first there comes the understanding, not merely the understanding, but a real, real conviction that God is dwelling there. You have not reached the transcendental consciousness yet, but you feel that presence within. This is the first step. Then, you see, with knowledge, with chit, that knowledge, there will arise love and joy. Now I shall tell you the nature of the Atman. If you realize it, you'll be freed from the bonds of ignorance and attain liberation. You see, when you realize that, then all ignorance is gone. You know, it is not that you have a vision of God today and again you forget tomorrow and you are the same person. That's not vision of God. You are seeing some ghosts. When you have once the vision of God, your whole life is that. A completely different life. Inner change comes. All bonds of ignorance are gone. And you have liberation. What does that mean? You have no more birth and death. You have reached that eternal life. There is a self-existent reality which is the basis of our consciousness of ego. Now again, you know, there is this. Every religion teaches how God is all-knowing. He knows our hearts. Every leaf that falls from the tree, He is aware of that. But then, how is that possible? What is going in your mind, in your heart? You see, nothing can go in your mind, in your heart, in any pulsation even, wink of the eye, without that presence. There is that presence of God, the Atman, the self-existent reality, which is the basis of everything. That I'm moving my hand is the basis of that. But again, this basis, this movement of my hand is possible. I already said my hand. This is consciousness of ego. So that is the root. From that, because of the presence of the Atman, there is this consciousness of ego. I am. And then all the functions of the body, mind, senses, you see, is the witness thereof. He knows everything. Because without Him, without His presence, it's not possible. This reminds me of a very interesting incident. You know, one time, this Swami Adbhutananda Lattu Maharaj was massaging Sri Ramakrishna. And then Sri Ramakrishna said, you see, Lattu was the one was that servant boy and was very literate. And he became one of the greatest wise men of our time, of our age. Not by studying books and scriptures, but by attaining the knowledge of God. Sri Ramakrishna asks him suddenly, Leto, tell me, when does God sleep? Oh, I don't know, sir. That's your business to tell me. Then Sri Ramakrishna said, you know, if God sleeps even one wink, the whole universe will topple down. So He can't sleep. He's always awake. Now again, don't think that God is somewhere high in the heaven, but that God is always awake within you, within me, in every being. When we are asleep, He is awake. When we are awake, He is awake behind. try to meditate upon these truths. The reality, that reality, is the knower of all states of consciousness, you see, waking, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. It is aware of the presence or absence of the mind and its function. It is the Atman. You see here, mark this. It is aware of the presence as well as absence of the mind. You know, when is the absence of the mind? In deep sleep. Mind is thinking, feeling, willing. And when there is nothing like that, mind is not there. And when you are under anesthetic, for instance, the mind is supposed to be not there. But yet, God is there. Atman is there. Watching over you. That reality sees everything by its own light. No one sees it. It gives intelligence to the mind and the intellect, but no one gives it life. Self-existent reality. That is, he is the light of all life. That reality pervades the universe, but no one penetrates it. It alone shines. The universe shines with its reflected light. See that I know, I am cognizant, I use my senses, or I see this universe. Whose light is that? That's the light of God. That's the light within my own consciousness, the light of consciousness. And that is of God, that is of the Atman. Because of its presence, the body, senses, mind and intellect apply themselves to their respective functions as though obeying its commands. Its nature is eternal consciousness. It knows all things, from the sense of ego to the body itself. It is the knower of pleasure and pain and of the sense objects. It knows everything objectively, just as a man knows the objective existence of a jar. See that you are suffering, he knows it. That you are happy, he knows it. But he is not mixed up either in your pleasure or in your pain. That is the ego's pleasure, ego's pain. You know, it's very interesting. And how does he see all that? Objectively. Just as I see this object, I am not affected by this object. Now, you see, try to meditate that. What do I mean by meditate upon that? A feeling arises, say pain or pleasure or depression or happiness. See them objectively. You are the Atman. And you see, they'll disappear. They'll not affect you. Because really they are not affecting you, only you are identifying yourself with those. So you say, today you are depressed, tomorrow you are happy. But learn to look upon them objectively. They are the play of the gunas. And then you see the fun. They get at it. This is the Atman, the Supreme Being, the Ancient. It never ceases to experience infinite joy, you see. It never ceases to experience infinite joy. There is that ananda all the time, doesn't it? And when you reach that, when you are that, you feel that infinite joy and never cease to. You cease to when you are identifying yourself with something else. is always the same. It's consciousness itself. The organs and vital energies function under its command. Here within this body, in the pure mind, in the secret chamber of intelligence, in the infinite universe within the heart, the Atman shines in its captivating splendor like a noonday sun. By its light, the universe is revealed. It is the knower of the activities of the mind and of the individual man. It is the witness of all the actions of the body, the sense organs and the vital energy. It seems to be identified with all these, just as fire appears identified with an iron ball. But it neither acts nor is subject to the slightest change. The Atman is birthless and deathless. It neither grows nor decays. It is unchangeable, eternal. It does not dissolve when the body dissolves. Does the ether cease to exist when the jar that encloses it is broken? The Atman is distinct from Maya, the primal cause, and from her effect, the universe. The nature of the Atman is pure consciousness. The Atman reveals this entire universe of mind and matter. It cannot be defined. In and through the various states of consciousness, the waking, the dreaming, and the sleeping, it maintains our unbroken awareness of identity. It manifests itself as the witness of the intelligence. You see, that is the proof of this Atman or God within, that we pass through these different states of consciousness, and then we pass through different stages of life, but there is a consciousness, I am I. That identity is always kept. With a controlled mind and an intellect which is made pure and tranquil, you must realize the Atman directly within yourself. Know the Atman as the real I. Thus you cross the shoreless ocean of worldliness, whose waves are birth and death. Live always in the knowledge of identity with Brahman and be blessed. I'll take this up next. May I invite questions? Why is it that Vedanta never mentions the presence of the angels and their role in the upliftment of mankind? I don't know. You see, Vedanta believes that there may be angels and also their opposites. And there may be all kinds of beings. But what good talking about them? What can they do? They are also as powerless as you. And yet again, you have all the power to uplift yourself and all mankind. Didn't you hear me say you are God? So angels are, you make angels. God is the creator of angels. Don't you see? So Vedanta only talks of God and those creatures, you see, angels. Why don't you care about those at all? An upliftment of mankind, you see. God comes as avatar to uplift mankind. And I don't know what angels can do about that. Angels are happy just. What do they do? Harping. They are busy harping. How is it to be subjective? Even vision of God may be objective. Now, vision of God is neither subjective nor objective. You see, vision of God means where there is neither subject nor object. Subject and object have become one. You see, I see this object, but I don't have the vision of this object then. Because I do not know, as long as I see this object and I subject and this object are different and separate, I do not have the vision of the object. I do not know what this object is. As a great German philosopher pointed out, Kant, that thing in itself remains unknown and unknowable because there is that demarcation between the subject and object. So if we know God that way, that I am subject and he is the object of my knowledge, well, then we don't know God. That will be, the thing in itself is not known. You may be having a vision of a ghost or something. That would not be God. What is the vision of God? Subject and object have become one, unified. That is why it is called unified knowledge. You see, in samadhi, there is unified knowledge. The thing in itself becomes known. And we do not call it either subjective or objective. Where the subject and object have become unified. You know, technically, you'll find Shankara somewhere else. I don't know if it is in this book. But technically, he calls it Triputi Veda. The untying of the three knots of knower, knowledge, and object of knowledge. You see, they are separated. And the knot is untied and they become unified. The knower, knowledge, and object of knowledge become one. Our impulse to do something which come to you on puja days, any different from those of other days? I don't know. You see, it all depends upon your mood of the mind. You see, I say, of course it is true that when there are many people gathering and offering worship, there's an atmosphere that is created. And so naturally you get higher tendencies. There's no doubt about that. And where you're invoking God, invoking the presence of God, the atmosphere is charged with power. And so naturally your mind is lifted up and you get an urge for higher things, no doubt. But that also depends upon your individual growth. And then again, you have to live in an atmosphere where you have created an atmosphere of puja day in your life, always. That is what you have to do. What is the law of karma? That's a very simple question. You know, it is in 2 minutes you cannot explain the law of karma, yet I'll try to explain that in 2 minutes. Whatever you sow, you reap. That's law of karma. You know what law of causation is. And that law of causation, you understand, works in the physical world. There is cause and effect. Every effect has a cause, and every cause produces an effect. Now that same law, the law of causation,
applies in the mental and moral plane as well. That is the law of karma. You think a thought of love, a cause you create, and in effect you are happy, you get love. There is hatred in you, as a cause, it brings hatred as effect and suffering. So that's the law of karma. And then every action or every thought creates an impression in the mind, not only produces an effect outside, but an effect inside. It produces an impression in the mind. And the sum total of those impressions form your character. You see, for instance, modern psychologists would tell you how there is subconscious mind, how you have lived, what you have thought, what you have done, all that is in your subconscious mind. And your present actions are guided by what you have put into your subconscious mind. That's the law of karma. But only law of karma goes further than the psychologist and point out that every child is again born with a store of karmas, with a store of impressions. You see, without that fund of knowledge again, without that store of knowledge, a store of impressions, you couldn't know anything. If the child's mind had been just blank, the child could never gather any experience whatsoever. Because what is knowledge? What is experience? Pigeonholing. You have a fund of knowledge somewhere within. That is the subconscious mind, law of karma. You see a cow. You never saw that animal before. How do you know it's an animal? You have cognition of other animals present in your mind. And so you realize this is an animal with four legs, with a tail. And it looks like such and such. So always there is that comparison in every knowledge. And without that fund of knowledge in you, your mind would remain blank. And where do you get that fund of knowledge? You inherit the body, the tendencies of the body. So, you had a past. Swami, you say God is within us, but is it not rather that we are within Him, within His glory? I still do not understand. Very good. You see, there's a beautiful passage in the Upanishad. The self is in all beings and all beings in the self. You see, God is within all beings and we all beings again live within God. Very true. Now, of course, if we try to understand that with our concept of time and space, of course we don't understand. It seems a crazy idea to say that. That God dwells within and we all dwell in Him. You see, from our standpoint it would seem a crazy idea. Because we try to understand through in terms of space. But take away this space. Then you can understand how God dwells within each of one of us and we can dwell in Him. All in your consciousness, you see. Nowhere else is God, but in your consciousness. Is the Divine Mother a personification of Prakriti? Is Prakriti different from Maya? Please distinguish and make these three, Divine Mother, Prakriti and Maya. That's our identity, identical. But of course when we use these words, we emphasize upon one aspect or the other. For instance, when we say Divine Mother, We consider Divine Mother as a personal being who is benevolent and who is one with God and who is also within us, is one with Brahman. Then when we say Prakriti, generally we think of Prakriti as the primordial cause of the universe. That of course is Divine Mother again. And then when we say Maya, which means the play of relativity, we emphasize upon that, so that's also the play of Divine Mother. Please explain the meaning of gunas in detail. Well, if you ask in detail, you see, in detail means you can talk for hours. And in detail also means you can talk for 2 minutes. There are 3 gunas, 3 substances, which make up this universe. And only we can tell of these substances according to their expressions. For instance, 1 substance expresses as happiness, tranquility, peace, goodness, purity. Another expresses that as activity, passion, doing things, good or bad. Then another substance expresses as laziness, lethargy, drowsiness, sleep, dullness. And these 3 substances are energies, make up the whole universe of mind and matter. And of course these 3 gunas again, same as Divine Mother, play of Mother. And when we identify ourselves with them, then there is suffering and bondage. And when we detach ourselves from them and see them objectively, then we are free.
Om Hari Om. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Savirjam Karavavahai Tejasena Bhatitamastu Ma Vidvishamahai. Om. May Brahman protect us. May He guide us. May He give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light into us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace.